Welcome to the Radiant Springs Church Podcast. Check out our website at radiantsprings.com for more information about us. If you are challenged with what you hear on this podcast, come join us on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock for our contemporary worship, message, fellowship, and coffee. Radiant Springs. Refreshing. Relevant. Real.
I was trying to think of a game that deals with making you use your mind. Now, most games make you use your mind. There's some games that don't really require a lot of strategy or thinking. Some of those can be like, have you ever played War with a deck of cards? You're pretty much just flipping the next card down. Or even like Sorry, if you ever played Sorry. It's not a whole lot of... There's a little bit. Now, chess. If you ever play chess or like Risk or me and my wife, I think every year for New Year's Eve we play. Have any of you guys ever played Settlers of Catan?
No.
Nobody's probably never heard of it, maybe. Maybe Tessa, Nigel, Sherry's heard of it? Okay, so we're not weird. Okay, so... Anyway, so this was kind of the only game that I could think of that everybody could see. And anybody, does your brains hurt?
No.
Does your mind hurt?
No.
No. All right. So I have a story to tell you guys. This happened a few Thursdays ago, February 5th. So right after kind of the second big snowfall. So we had no school on that Wednesday, and we didn't have a youth group. And so let me share the story before I share what I talked about the previous Wednesday. So I took my dog out, and it's freezing outside. I'm kind of late going. I had to drive to Lincoln to go sub, and it's freezing outside. I checked my weather app, and it said -9 degrees, but it said feels like -21. So it's pretty cold outside, and literally my nose froze shut. I was sneezing or something, and I went outside, and my nose like froze shut. It was so cold outside. And the day before, he did not go #2. So I was like, he needs to go because he hasn't had an accident in the house. So I did not want that to happen. So it was cold. He didn't go #2 all day. And I'm sure he was cold. And he did not want to go. I was walking around all these blocks, through the alleys, everything. And I was about ready to go home, so I was starting to take him home. I was like, oh, I give up. and then he decided to go. A few bucks, we're walking home, and he decides to go in some person's driveway. And, of course, there's a lot of snow out and everything, and so he goes in their driveway. So back to the previous Wednesday at youth group, what did I tell one of my pet peeves was? Do you guys remember? People that don't pick up their dog's droppings. And so I eventually did not pick up his drop. And so I made all these excuses. I was walking forever. It was freezing outside. My hands are cold. I had gloves on, and my hands were burning. You know that burning feeling when it's cold outside? And so, by the way, the first time it snowed really, really hard, I was walking our dog, and the dog's name is Baxter, so I was walking him. And this was on Sunday or Saturday, and this particular house, I usually don't like to walk in their yard because there's another dog there, and their dog just barks all the time, really annoying. And they never shovel their sidewalks. And lo and behold, we were right by their house, and I dropped his leash, and he runs into their yard. It's all full of snow and packed, and so I was mad, but he just wanted to play and in that particular yard, and I got cold and wet, and snow was in my boots, and so they never shovel their sidewalks. It was super cold, and I was making all these excuses. It's so cold. It's in a particular spot where nobody's going to know, and it's on all this snow, yada, yada, yada. And I have little bags that I use to pick it up. I was like, I'm going to have to take my hand on my glove and put it over. It was like 6:30 in the morning. So I made all these excuses that I didn't want to pick it up. And then I was like, well, I'll come by later and pick it up. So I'm thinking in my head that I'm going to pick it up later. So let me read these the rest of these verses. Brent read James 1, 1 through 11. And so I'm going to read James 1, 12 through 27. And I have it up on the screen. James 1, 12 through 27. And it's at, and I'm going to read a lot of verses, so I'm going to need some water. Says, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Do not be deceived, my brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father, of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in the mirror, and after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their religion is worthless. Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and keep oneself from being polluted by the world. Okay, so that's a lot there, and I'm going to use most of these verses to go through this, and maybe some of you guys have probably got the gist of where I'm going with this, but Dave's not in here, because I have a definition. I'm going to read. Nobody got that. He likes definitions. He said that earlier. So I have the definition of justification. Now, I know Gil and Emily aren't here. They're in Alabama this week. And he went through a big word last week. Anybody remember what word he went through? Righteousness. Okay, so this is another big word. Justification, it kind of goes along with righteousness. So justification is the act of showing something to be right or reasonable. So in God's eyes, Dave, I read a definition for you. So in God's eyes, we're justified through Christ. Christ died for our sins. We're justified in God's eyes because on our own, we won't be able to do it. So many times when we sin, it is because we have justified the sin in our lives, meaning we have made excuses in order to do it. So with my story, with walking my dog, and now I've apologized, I don't know how many times, and I apologize to the kids because I broke what I what I said, is we kind of make excuses and we kind of justify in our minds in order to do something right. I don't know how many times I've done that. I know maybe some of us have done it. And so some of those excuses that we've probably made into our heads is either everybody does it, it's never hurt anyone, it's not going to hurt myself or anybody, so I might do it or continue to do it. Excuse of, oh, it's only just once, or maybe nobody will ever know. Nobody will know that my dog went number two here. There's all the snow. Nobody will see. And so on and so on. I think of like maybe a little toddler or something where they're just beginning to learn things. And you might go up. Maybe the toddler, I don't know, drew on the wall. I don't have any kids or kids yet, but I can already think of maybe the little things here and there that kids do. Maybe they write on the walls or chew gum and put it everywhere, or I've heard of things where kids play with their number two and it gets everywhere. I've heard stories of that. But you go up to them and you say, "Did you do this?" And they probably lie, right? They'll say no, or they'll might point to their brother or sister to do it, that they did it, or what. But they probably think, if I don't tell anybody, I won't get in trouble. And so that's kind of their justification for that. So our society, our culture, is very good about justifying things in order to do them. So you think of back, I guess, every decade or so, and you can see just how our society has changed. Whether it's the way we dress, the way movies are, the way we talk, the way just society in general is. I'm kind of buzzing, am I? The way society is in general. And so we can kind of see how even, I was thinking of this, I've never kind of had a message over kind of justifying our, how we kind of justify and we play mind games with us, and that's why I titled this, we kind of play mind games with ourselves in order to do something maybe that we're not supposed to. And so I have 3 points from the passage that I read. So the first point is sin is a process. So a lot of times it starts small. Those little lies that we tell when we're toddlers or elementary kids, they might seem harmless at times, but those things can get bigger and bigger because we know that we can get away with something small, and so we will tend to keep going and keep going and keep going until maybe we get into adulthood, and then it just, those lies become bigger. But every little bit that we go, it can usually and gets bigger and bigger. So I was subbing in a classroom in Lincoln, and a few weeks ago, and there's a particular student in there that didn't really kind of want to be there, and he wasn't really doing what he was supposed to, and he was on his phone. And there was a student teacher in the room, so whenever there's a student teacher in there, I'm pretty much just sit back and monitor the kids or whatever. The student teacher pretty much has the classroom, and so I was just kind of focused on this particular student. And the assignment was basically they were doing a project, and all they had to do was get a piece of paper and write their names on it and put it up because there wasn't enough time to work on the project, and so they were going to work on this poster. So he gets up, and there's a mug in the front of the room with dry erase markers on it. So he walks up there, and he takes a purple dry erase marker, and he sticks it in his sleeve, and he kind of walks around like nobody saw him. But then he goes and shows the kids that he was sitting next to, like, he got something, and he was proud of it or whatever, and he was saying about all these different things that he was going to use. Are we good? It's okay, Nigel. Anyway, so he brings this marker back, and I'm kind of watching him the whole time, see what he does with it, because I didn't want to tell him, like, you know, some kids just kind of mess around and play around, so I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt. And so he writes his name on the poster, and he brings it up, and he never sticks the marker back in. So the end of the period comes, and so he still has it. And so he kind of stayed a little bit after. Usually I think one of those kids would want to be the first one to leave the class, but he stays, and he was working on something or whatever. And so I was kind of wait to kind of confront him and bring it up. And so he kind of gets his stuff ready, and he never puts it back. And so he walks by, and I ask him, I'm like, "So when are you going to put that marker back?" And he's like, "What are you talking about?" And I'm like, "That purple marker that you took." I was like, "Well, when are you going to put that back?" And he's like, "I have no idea what you're talking about." I was like, "You know, I was watching you the whole time. You took a purple marker from the mug. It's not there." And the student teacher kind of walked in and came there. He's like, "Yeah, the purple marker's not in here. What happened to it?" And he was kind of making all these excuses and stuff. And he's like, "Oh, well, I put it back." And we're like, well, it's not in the mug. He's like, oh, well. And he looks through his backpack, and he pulls out a marker, but it was a black one. He's like, oh, this is it. I was like, no, that color's not purple. And he was like, no, this is the marker I took. I was like, no, that's yours. You keep that. I was like, the one that you took was your teacher's. And he was kind of defensive and making excuses and stuff. And he eventually just kind of got fed up and just walked out of the classroom. I'm like, okay, well, I'll let the office deal with this or whatever. So I put his name up and the office dealt with it or whatever. But and he left the black marker. Anyways, the black marker, it didn't even work. So he probably grabbed the purple one because he needed a new one. And the reason I'm saying the story is to many, it might seem like a small thing. It's just some purple marker or whatever. But it's like, I think of sin always starts as insignificant and small. So this thing that he's stealing, he's a high schooler, but who knows, if he got away with this, he probably would have done it again and again and again. And eventually, I don't know, if he doesn't check himself, he'll probably start stealing some stuff more significant. Because, you know, a lot of times if we get away with things, probably keep on doing them. When I was younger, sorry, Mom, if I got away with stuff, I would probably keep on doing it. Verse 14 and 15 says, but each person is tempted when they are dragged away by their own evil desire and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. And so this goes into my next point. We need to recognize sin in our lives. Sin always starts small until we do something about it, and it will continue to get bigger. We need to recognize the sin in our lives and the process that it plays in order to cut it out of our lives. I wrote down, sometimes we just need to do a heart check and ask ourselves, what in my life needs to be cut out? What do I need to cut out in my life in order that I can live a more godly life, a more healthy life? I was reading a book this past week, I'm still reading it. I'm a slow reader, but it talks about pruning a bush, and how when you prune a bush, what does pruning mean? Means cutting off the dead flowers or whatever you're pruning, cutting off the dead pieces of the plant, and you need to cut off the branches, parts that are dying and not doing well, because eventually they're going to negatively affect the rest of the plant. So if you're pruning a tomato plant, you cut off the dead parts because you want the really good tomatoes to do well. Because if they're dead parts, they're going to they want all the nutrients. So you want all the good nutrients to go to the tomatoes that are doing well. And so verse 21 to 22 says, therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. I was praying this week, and I was thinking of the verse where it says, Jesus was saying, if you love me, you would obey me. And I was just thinking of that, like, man, that hits me hard sometimes, where Jesus is like, if you love me, you obey me. Because I know a lot of times I'll say, okay, God, I love you, I love you. But yet, if I'm not doing what he says, and even James was talking about, don't merely just listen to the word. Don't just listen to it and read it and deceive ourselves. But he says, do what it says. And the last verse I had, sometimes when we have mind games or whatever, I know a lot of times Jesus says, in 1 Corinthians 14:33, my next point is, God is not about confusion. 1 Corinthians 14:33 says, for God is not a God of confusion, but of peace. Verses 13 and James says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. Verse 16 says, don't be deceived, my brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. He chose to give us birth through the word of truth, that we might be a kind of first fruits of all he created. So sometimes life can be confusing. I know perfectly well sometimes it's just we don't have the answers to stuff, and things come up and stuff, and we're confused sometimes. We just don't know what's going on. We might be like, okay, God, what's going on? What do I do? But God's not a God of confusion. I loved last week where when Gil was preaching, he kept bringing up the that we need to come to God in confidence, in boldness, being confident that God's going to do what he says he's going to do. Verse 25 says, "But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." So I know sometimes if we're confused or if we're maybe at times we don't know what to do, God says to not give up. God will bless us. Verse 12 says, "Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him." And I wrote this down, "Let us not give up because the world gives up so easily. Let us not give up because we are going through a difficult time. Let us not give up because it seems too hard at times. Let us not give up because we are going through maybe a time of confusion." But God wants us to come to him with confidence that he will do what he says and that his promises are true, especially in our circumstances. And so I want to invite the worship team up here. And so that's pretty much all I have this morning. And kind of the basis that I wanted to go is, you know, sometimes, I know Brent's been preaching over, he's going to finish up next week, about small things that make a big difference. And that's kind of been sticking with my train of thought. A couple weeks ago, we spoke on about the parable of the talents, where probably one of the things that, I guess the most well-known things that was said in there is, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful in the small things, and I will put you in... I'll give you more things, more responsibilities." God wants us to be faithful in the small things. And even if something that we know that we shouldn't do, and I said this last Wednesday, maybe the kids will remember, is we know, if we know something is right, and the Bible talks about this, if we know that something is right, if we know that something is right, we'll do it, because otherwise the Bible calls it, would call it sin. It would be wrong. So don't neglect the small things in life, because those things definitely add up. And so we're gonna have a time of prayer and worship. And so I invite those that are gonna be up here to pray and agree with anybody in prayer. So you can make your way up here, and we're gonna end on a song called "Hungry."